Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. This channel, Trauma and Social Change, it's absolutely the moment for that, isn't it? I'm Steve Hoskinson. I'm the founder of Organic Intelligence. I've been teaching in this area of trauma, embodiment, and social change for about 25 years. It's an honor, really, for us to be sponsoring this channel where we're going to hear a multiplicity of voice, all unique contributors to our collective understanding of how to move from trauma and support then social change. Our unique voice in organic intelligence has something to do with a koan that I'd like to present to you, which is trauma means unintegrated resource. And that's a koan, and if you'd like and are feeling intrigued about that riddle, then tune in to the post-trauma system development course that we are offering here. The coupon code that'll get you half off on that is ENJOY. Now, enjoy this next presentation, and we'll look forward to another meaningful time as we explore these topics, trauma and social change. Enjoy.
Thank you, Steve, and we are back. And let me introduce you our panelists today with us. Jacqueline Richards, she's a mother of two and parent empowerment mentor from New Zealand. And also with us, Natasha Weisgerber, I hope this time I pronounce it right, from Russia. And she's solo mother of an 11-year-old boy, certified embodied facilitator, coach, and trainer of resilience to adults and educators. Also with us, Miles Kessler, teacher of Aikido, meditation, and integral practice, and founder of the Integral Dojo from United States, located in Israel now, and he's father of two daughters. And last but not least, this is Manal Aldaba, embodied parenting coach and movement facilitator. So, let's start from the very beginning. Why are you on this panel? You asked me about why did we decide to make this panel? And now it's my turn to ask you why are you here apart from that I called you? Actually, Jacqueline is first on my screen. If you're willing to go first, please do.
Sure. So embodiment has been a big journey of mine, coming from a place of complete shutdown, you know, complete suppression and complete numbness. Also a lot of pain in my body in the way that I held myself in the past. And it got to the point in my life where I had a lot of pain in my heart, and my heart was literally screaming out for me to do something different. So a way of finding my way out of here and opening my heart was how I came into embodiment, because I was so disconnected. I was so disembodied. And at that time, my doctor said, look, it's stress, you know. So I had to reach out. I had to actually find a way of doing something different. And that is what brought me into breathing and sounding and moving and being able to now bring this into my kids' lives and bring it into the lives of the clients that I work with is an incredible gift, because it's been such a transformation in my life. So that's why I'm sitting here on this panel. I don't just mentor in a way of, you know, consciousness and talking therapy and concepts. I use the body so that I can help my clients feel, because I know the difference it made in my life.
Mm. Nice.
Thanks. Thank you. I can, you know, be pointing at your fingers, but maybe if you just join when you feel.
Well, since my mic's already open, I'll just say briefly, I'm a professional embodiment teacher, I suppose. I'm an Aikido teacher, and as well as kind of integral life practices. I'm also a meditation teacher. I'm a professional daddy, but I am not a professional parenting educator. So I'm here more from the embodiment side, the meditation side, and a lover of two gorgeous little girls.
Mm. Thanks. I think there's a lot of demand, you know, not only for professional, but also for just personal experience of how to bring all this embodied parenting into your life. So, okay.
Well, I'll continue from Miles. Well, I also have a personal story of transformation with embodiment, and it worked amazingly for me, saved my life to some extent. And obviously, because I saw how fantastically it worked with me and how much life and hope and brought into my life, I kind of, you know, obviously I wanted to pass it on to my son, because I come to an age where I thought, what would be my legacy? Mm. And embodiment perfectly answered this question. And from educator's point of view, because I work with parents and educators, I believe we're both in this position where we do have to learn how to be, how to do things, not just what to do. Yes, and I've watched Manal Yo's talk, and I very much agree on this. So I do believe we have a lot of learning to do on the side of embodiment, and this is why I'm here, basically, to spread the word that it works, and then it's worth doing.
Well, I guess I'll take it from you, Natasha. Thank you for being on my session first. And well, I think for me, embodiment have made me a better parent. So I have two boys, they're 13 and 15. And maybe for the first 5-7 years, I was a very stressed parent. And with, you know, not that I intentionally, you know, started working with embodiment, my background in conscious dance, but as I dug deeper into the embodiment world and how to connect with my own self and coach my own self first, I found that is, oh wow, this is have made me a better parent for sure. And, you know, and through embodiment, I can become the parent that I want to be for my kids. And for this panel specifically, and especially so that it's within the trauma track, working with the body, with children, especially who have, you know, trauma history. So especially birth trauma, which was the case of my second son who was born prematurely, is that understanding the trauma aspect of, you know, birth and all these things and how to deal with it from a body's perspective made a lot of things much easier. And it had, you know, brought, you know, our relationship in a much better place. So yeah, that's in a nutshell. And also Julie and Kim asked me.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you all. And, you know, I was listening to you and the first question came to my mind, like, okay, and what does it really mean, embodied parenting? What is this? And then I actually thought, okay, and what does it mean, parenting? Because I guess it's different for each of us, right? Maybe childing, parent. How do you understand this from like the very basic?
So what I'm hearing you say, Kim, is in terms of what is parenting and what is embodied parenting, and I love that because parenting is not just parenting our children, it's parenting that small version of ourselves, you know, that there's that smaller version of ourselves is still in there, you know, the small child. And I was talking to a friend of mine earlier today and she was like, well, what about your teenager? You know, how often do you let your teenager sort of get out and have a play? And I thought, wow, that's something that I hadn't thought of in that way, the same way that I think of, you know, my little girl, my sort of 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 year old girl, where that program period is just sort of starting to come to an end. And so the way that I look at parenting is that it's not actually parenting my children, it's parenting myself, which actually flows through out to my children. So when I first came into embodiment, I thought I was doing it for them, because so many parents out there, you know, give all of themselves out to their children, either their children or whatever it is that they're putting in front of themselves. And I spoke about this in my session. I call it that we put our kids first trap, and we fall into it as parents, and, you know, start to give all of our energy and all of our goodness out to our kids and keep nothing left for ourselves. However, when we can start to flip that, then it organically flows out to them anyway. And it's a really different process. So when you were speaking, Kim, it was like, you know, it absolutely is reparenting, or parenting ourselves and being the parent so that we can use that in the way that we are parenting every aspect of our child self, our teenage self. And in terms of embodiment, I agree, Manal, it just made me a better parent. You know, it gave me that time to pause. And the way that I sort of language that is, that it allowed me to find and occupy that space between being like really triggered and the potential reaction, you know, that pause space where I could actually choose to do something different. And that is such a huge part that embodiment gave to me. You know, that was the gift. So yeah, there's so much richness and so much beauty in terms of embodiment and parenting. I'd love to hear what the other members of
I can just take it from there, because I love the idea of parenting yourself, because we all have past history, we all have aspects of ourselves that are our inner child, our inner teenager, whatever, our inner, you know, playful one, our inner serious one, whatever it may be. And until we not just befriend that, but until we inhabit that, it won't be fully integrated into who we are. And forgive me, I don't know the sponsor of this channel's name, but I just wrote down what he said. He said, trauma means uninterrupted, integrated resource. So if we're not in touch with our own inner child, and again, let's have a conversation with our own inner child, but let's inhabit that. Only through the inhabiting of our own inner child do we become an integrated human being. Then and only then are we really able to kind of connect with that in others, especially in our children. And it's just one last thing I'll say, like in my Aikido work, which is an embodiment practice, but it's actually it's a martial art that leads towards resolution, leads towards resolution of conflict, leads towards wholeness. If there's an aspect inside of me that I'm disconnected from, whatever it may be, from trauma or just from ignorance or whatever, I will never be able to connect with and blend with and play with that very aspect in somebody else. And it's the same thing with our children. And what's beautifully unique and incredibly like God designed this somehow, our children are going to find the parts in us that are not integrated like that. Like nobody else in the world can. Yeah, right. Exactly. They push the buttons. daddy, boom.
And invite us to grow. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. To me, because sometimes when I'm looking at, you know, what parenting and mothering, you know, as have done to me, and the best way of explaining it is like, you know, my kids have, you know, showed me the best version of myself, like, you know, never before, and the absolute worst. You know, because I don't think in my own personal life I would find a relationship that would, you know, really bring me face to face, you know, with those parts of myself, because any other relationship is, you know, there's always the option of goodbye, shut the door and leave. But with the kids, we just, and especially when they're, you know, younger, you know, they're babies and toddlers, we can't just say, hey, you know what, I don't need this, let's is there a return policy on this? There's no. So yeah, that's what parenting is, really.
For me, parenting is very, very, very complicated. Well, it's one of the most complicated roles that maybe humans are up for. And this saying, you know, what they say, it takes a village to raise a child. Well, actually, it does take a village to raise a child, but before the Industrial Revolution, before the like the pre-industrial society, people lived in the village, and where children did learn from different adults, different strategies, different embodiments of different people, wise man, silly man, I don't know. Now we are literally stuck, and even now and in lockdowns, like stuck together in a very a very small space, and we are the source of everything to our children. So this is what makes it so difficult, I think, for us in modern days, because we like there's such a challenge to be so different to them, just to meet such different needs for controlling, for self-organizing, for playing, because this is what they have to learn all these things, the playing strategies, the organizing strategies. And this is why embodiment, for me, is such a miracle tool, because embodiment does give you this, like the opens this source of variety. That, well, this works for me because, worked for me because I can't play with my son. And I learned how to play through embodiment. Mm. And it was, he's like, oh, mommy, I wish you could play with me. And I was like, okay, I can read a book, I can sort your Lego, I can't play. And I did an embodiment practice to learn how to play with my son. And now he's like, after a year of my AFC and practice, and he said, I don't know what you're doing there, but it makes my life so much easier. This is his feedback. So this is for me what's parenting and embodied parenting means. It's like really trying to meet all these needs that our children have, because we are the only ones, really.
You know, this just occurs to me. I'm just going to throw this out there as a question for the other parents, because what Natasha's saying, pointing to is how important it is that we have our own practices, our own development. But as parents, oh my God, who has time for that? Who has time for that? So I'd be interested to hear how, I mean, I'm lucky that my profession is embodiment and meditation. So, and believe me, I have my limitations in other areas that I don't bring my best game to my children. But that's kind of an easy thing for me. But I'm just curious, what do you guys or gals, how do you find that balance between your need to practice and develop as a parent and finding the time to do that?
Yeah, I mean, it's, oh, sorry, Manal, do you want to go?
No, go ahead. That was just, it was a sigh of,
go ahead, Jacqueline. Yeah.
It's such a beautiful piece here because, you know, and I have another trap that I talk about in terms of the work that I do with parents, and it's called the Never Enough Time Trap. Because we're in this world where there's just never enough time and everything's just keeps going. And it's almost like you feel, if I could just step off the hamster wheel for a moment. And one of the biggest pieces that I have in the program that I do around the Never Enough Time Trap is we need to stop filling our time with so much stuff. And I know that for me, when I started to shift my relationship with time, then things started opening up and time felt like it was expanding. It felt like it was extending. And it was just phenomenal because, I mean, there's only 24 hours in the day, right? We can't actually create anymore. So we need to change our relationship to it. So that's one piece that I really love to work on with parents, because there's a huge belief out there, isn't there, that I just don't have any time now because I'm a parent. And it's almost like we create our life and we set up our life to reinforce that belief, you know, because then you're right. Yeah. And we love to be right. And the ego loves to be right. And I love that because it's like, actually, when we start to really shift that belief, and I call them beliefs because it's fun, and the word belief is the word lie written in the middle of it. So really starting to play with that, you know, do we really not have enough time for these things? Or is it simply that we're making other things important?
Or when we do have time, we're so exhausted. You know,
yeah,
what about the self-care? Sorry, I'm not going to jump in, Manal or Natasha. I just felt like, wow.
Well, so how do you find that balance? Because I know that when I do my practices, I get more energy.
Yes.
I kind of have to spend it to get more of it. But when I work with parents, it's like, just keep it small, keep it simple. You don't have to do an hour-long session. You know, that's if you can fit 10 minutes in the morning before your kids get up, then your day is going to go so much better. So that's one piece. I think just keep it simple, keep it small so that it's consistent and manageable.
Yeah, and trying to kind of connect the practice into your daily life is also, it worked for me, for example. I did my center, and probably. I do my centering a lot when I'm cooking. And it's kind of, you know, I'm cooking and centering, and it makes me less exhausted from cooking because I'm not always up for that, but it really helps me to just continue my practice.
Well, for me, is letting go of the idea that it has to be in a certain way. This is what I need to practice, and this is what it should be. And it has to be the same thing every day. Because for the longest time, I've held to that belief that, you know, oh, I'm not disciplined, I can't do something, long enough. But I realized that I'm having the practice fixed into a shape and time, irrelevant of what's going on with life. And that was not sustainable. So if I have time to go for a walk for half an hour a day, great, I'll do that. Sometimes it's a 5 minutes to make the practice adaptable is what I found that could get me sustained. With the conference, sometimes my practice and my self-care is 5 minutes laying on the floor, just maybe having my feet up. So, and that really is the pressure that, okay, I am practicing something every day. And, you know, with meditation, and I had, you know, a session with Miles and he put my mind to ease, whereas like, okay, I have to meditate and I have to sit and I have to do that. And for the longest time I was doing it in bed, you know, under covers, because I love that time of the day. And that was like, well, if it's working well for you, and you know, I don't want to step into a meditation teaching here, Miles, but it's adapting the meditation, you know, that helps me to, in a way that is, I can actually do it instead of beating myself up that I can't get up and have a sit for 20, 30 minutes every day. And that was the same for any other practices. So having the intention of, I need to do something, I need it. It's not a luxury that I,
right. Yeah.
It's something that I need, just like I need to have, you know, eat to be able to do things. I need to set time and do something. And if it's that 5 minutes, great. If it's an hour, great. If it's a month, why not? But that never happens.
Great. And I'm hearing you all talking about these practices, and also in the chat, there is a mentioning of a book, These Micro Moments. And I was just thinking that, you know, not everybody is so developed in embodiment as you are. And for people who have no idea what you're talking about when you say centering meditation or whatever, like, can you give us, like, maybe each of you some micro moments to, you know, try right now to get this a little bit of practice?
Well, maybe I'll just say one thing, a kind of a general principle thing, and I'll let the others, because, you know, if we all give something, it's going to take a lot of time. But I'll just say that embodiment, like mindfulness, is a universal principle. That means all times, all places, all circumstances, it can be accessed, tapped into, and quote unquote, practiced naturally or with discipline, whatever you want to do. You know, we all have to find that kind of balance in our life. It's universal. You know, certain things like weightlifting or running or I don't know, reading books, those are suitable for certain times, certain places, and certain circumstances. Mindfulness and embodiment, and or I kind of use those interchangeably, they're not only the universal, all times, all places, and all circumstances, but they bring benefit to wherever you are, whatever you're doing, in whatever situation. They just bring more depth. So that's what I'll just kind of throw out there as a principle, and then let others kind of share a practice.
Yeah, I'd love to share something. I had an experience with one of my mentors, and it articulated the way that I feel in terms of embodiment and what it can give in terms of really getting underneath, or really getting underneath the thoughts and getting to what is actually in here. And I remember he'd asked me, he'd said, oh, so, you know, how are you doing today? And I just went, blah, 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 you know, with all this kind of stuff of like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm feeling really grounded. I'm feeling really good and blah, blah, blah. And then he said, hang on, I want you to pause. Yeah. And he said, I want you to put your hand on your heart and I want you to close your eyes. And I did that. And I just breathed for a few moments. And then he said, now, how do you feel? And my eyes welled up with tears and I started crying and said I was sad. And that, for me, is the difference. And it really got me to a place where I wasn't looking out here anymore for the answers. I was going here. And that's one of the things that I use with my kids in terms of finding out what's going on in here rather than outside of yourself.
Just a quick question. So that awesome for yourself, but do you also do that with your kids? I mean, not coaching them into that, but absolutely, just like being present for them.
Absolutely. Because sometimes they'll come in and they'll say, blah, 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 blah. And I'll just hang on a minute, sunshine. You know, and I'll kind of, let's just back the truck up a bit and just get them to take a couple of breaths and actually put their hands on their body. It doesn't matter if, you know, they're just kind of giving themselves a hug or bringing their hands or their heart or their belly and closing their eyes for a moment. And it's just incredible, the difference.
Yeah, and especially in a moment of emotional, let's say, challenge that our children may be going through, stopping as embodied parents, holding that space for them and letting them unwind.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Nice.
Mm. Yeah, the power of posing.
Hmm? Power of posing. Love it.
It's like you create space for the child to appear.
I'm so happy to be with
you. It's a difficult thing to do, actually. Like, I literally teach people how to pause. Mm. And yes, and for me also, the how am I with a hand on my heart, my chest, also works very well. And I like to keep the track where I get my support from. Like, I'm sitting down, what's supporting me right now? Like, literally, feet, my bottom, and it helps to stay in myself. So if we're talking about something quick and easy to do, Kim, that's, I agree, also very accessible at any moment.
So it's kind of getting a little bigger perspective. So I feel not only all this, but also my bum sitting on the chair, my feet standing on the floor, and kind of back in here.
Over 10 years ago, my one of my teachers, my Nia teachers, and I was talking to her about this, and she said, sense your feet. That was her suggestion, sense your feet. And it's taking me that long to come to this practice of when things are going up really high and tantrums happening, my tantrums and my kids' tantrums, is to come back to that feet. And it does need a practice. It's as simple as taking a pause or feeling our bum on the chair or sensing our feet. Without the embodiment practice of it, it's just goes out of the window as soon as any stress happens. So, sense your feet. That was the first advice I got.
So I actually do have something to offer here. And it just comes from sitting with it's so nourishing to sit with parents, I gotta tell you, you know. And not just sitting with parents, but in the way that we're actually gathering here. There's a quote from Jesus. I mean, I'm not Christian myself, but the quote always stuck with me. He said that when two people come together in my name, I will be there. And it's like, oh yeah, that's great. When we gather around something, so the way I translate that, when we gather around something that's transpersonal, transcultural, is something that's just bigger than all of us. And we actually gather around, it's a universal principle. When we gather around that, it arises in the meeting. And I just feel completely nourished by sitting and sharing with four other parents and whoever else is on this panel. In a way, we're gathering around embodied parenting. And so thank you for that.
And it's amazing how, you know, no matter how different our backgrounds, our upbringing, our whatever it is, when it comes to parenting, it's the same issue.
It's universal.
The same, you know, it's the same stuff. Mm-hmm. Same struggles, same hopes and dreams. So yeah, and there is, I second you that with that, Miles, that there is something about coming together and saying, you know, I hear you, I know what you're feeling. And there is, you know, I see you and you see me. It's such a powerful thing. And I think for parents specifically, that space is not always there, because there's a lot of, you know, perfectionism in parenting that we don't want to admit, that we want to see, you know, our kids are doing well, we have it together, whatever this together is, I have no idea. Yeah. So yes, it's like, yes.
The illusion of having it together.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think the acceptance, right, that is the platform for change, when we can actually accept that, we're all going through this stuff. We all have, slightly different versions of the same thing going on. And how much lightness and laughter and you know, it provides that platform for change. It just changes everything as soon as we can realize that we're all stuck in these same cycles, you know, that come from the past and you know, even to the point where it allows us to not only let go of the guilt and the blame and the, you know, all that
oh yeah, totally, totally,
that we have, and all the resentment for our parents, because they were just their own totally version of the cycle. And you know, and I mean, I use a tool called the face slap, which is literally just, oh my God, you know, I'm so stuck in these traps of the cycles of the past. And also knowing that, you know, in terms of embodiment, and this is something that I share a lot around, that we have no reference point for embodiment. If we had never seen it before in our childhood upbringing, which so many of us didn't, we have no reference point for it. We've never seen it done. And, you know, we just go on to repeat what we saw our parents do. So when we can bring it into our lives and model it to our children, I mean, it's such a gift that not only we're giving to ourselves, but we're also giving to our children, which is going to ripple out. And, you know, we're talking about social change on this channel, and that is it. You know, we're in it. We're doing it. Just sharing like this and bringing embodiment through, not only to our children, but also to our clients, which is, it's just so beautiful to hear it from all these other parts of the world and to be sitting on a panel with you. It's beautiful.
Well, what is social change? I mean, that's what caught me in this title. I know this is a drama and social change channel, which is beautiful. I love that those two are together. But what is social change for embodied parenting? I mean, I've been thinking about that, and I would love to hear my fellow esteemed.
Can I just reflect on, Manel, you said this beautiful phrase, I see you and you see me. And I remember, Jacqueline, one of your traps is like this trap, this belief that parenting is very difficult. And for me, this is like the embodiment, and it's kind of related to social change too. But it's this embodiment really helps to enjoy your parenthood. It's like you don't have to pretend, you don't have to put this role. And it is about being genuine with your children also, yes? It's like when you can be genuinely angry or sad, and you don't have to waste a lot of energy on pretending that everything is okay. And these are the lessons that's like powerful lessons that children learn, and the strategies of being real and then handling it. It's like, yes, I can be sad, I can be puzzled, it's like my business is going out of the window, it's like it is stressful time for me. It's like, I can't support you in your studying, but okay, let's do something for each other. I don't know, I'm just talking about this. And it just allows this for this shift, like to release this energy that's just stuck on being parent, of like playing this role, being this parent, which is this and this and this, and then putting it into something else. And I think it allows us for this connection between the close people and the family to stay throughout as the children grow, because when they're toddlers, they're cute. And when they're teenagers, it's a different story. And your relationship has to transform. And it's important to keep the connection.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and it is about being honest and real with each other.
Well, I hear you speaking a lot about this kind of role of parent and being yourself as a parent, and how this role may, actually spoil the relationship somehow. And I have a lot of clients, coaches, friends around myself who are kind of into this idea, being yourself and, don't get into this role model, but finding it so difficult to do that. So what are your takes on how actually you can be yourself, and when this role is so pushing from somewhere behind?
Yeah, I'd love to jump in and talk on that one. It's just such a big one, because so many of the clients that I work with, and definitely this was part of my own journey, I just completely lost myself when I became a parent. Completely 100% lost myself. And it was like I put my parent hat on, and I forgot where I put all my other hats. You know, my woman hat, my lover hat, my wife hat, my work hat, all of these other hats that were buried at the back of the wardrobe somewhere. And, you know, I really had to work hard to try and find these hats again and to put them back on, and have this understanding that being a parent is one of the things that I do, not the only thing that I do. And I know that a lot of parents fall into that trap. And, you know, around putting your kids first, and that burden of responsibility that we take on for ourselves when we become parents. And the way that I love to lift out of that is to find out what lights you up again, you know, find out what makes you come alive and what blows your hair back and, you know, really, really gets you cooking. And that's your passion. And for some people, being a parent is their passion. You know, it's what they've always wanted to do, always wanted to be a mum and always wanted to be a dad. And for some other people, it's a whole bunch of other stuff. And if you lose that stuff, then you're actually modeling to your kids to do the same. You know, so if you're living your passions and living your dreams and bringing that yes energy, which is what I like to call it, home, and then it filters down to your children, then you're inviting them to live their passions as well. So that's the way I love to talk about it, because it actually gives parents the permission to begin to put themselves first, begin to do what they love to do, what lights them up, because then they know that by doing that, they're modeling that same behavior to their kids and inviting their kids to do the same, inviting their kids to live their passions. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't, then they won't, or they will find it much more challenging. So it's the perfect reason to put yourself first and make sure that you're living your own passions, for sure.
Yeah, it's an interesting kind of dilemma, because, you know, maybe not everybody, but I would suppose that there's an innate movement inside of all parents to prioritize their children, certainly in the early years. They are priority, and then we put ourselves back. But the irony that's often missed is that to really kind of put them priority as first, we need to prioritize ourselves first. We have to actually take care of ourselves. And as Jacqueline was saying, just come get into contact with our own authenticity, because that's what gets lost in the whole kind of parenting, whatever, dilemma. And if we, so we must have practices. I mean, certainly for mothers, forgive me, I can't really speak about that, but certainly for mothers, the first year, if not 2 years, is like, okay, the baby is, it's all organized around the baby. But as a father too, now everything's organized around the mother and the baby. So I put myself last a lot of times, but we have to come into contact with who we are.
Yeah.
I mean, that's if we're going to prioritize them first, we must prioritize our own wellness, our own authenticity, our own repair, our own recovery, our own process, our own needs, or else there is no social change.
Someone said earlier that, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. And now we don't have that village. So we put on the whole responsibility and that we want to do it all. We want to be the cool parent, the parent who feeds their kids, you know, the healthy, all the stuff that, you know, we want them to learn, you know, all everything. And we have to do it ourselves, which is impossible. So, and it becomes unauthentic. Even though I don't really care about this and that, but I think it should happen and there's no one else to do it. So I'm going to jump on doing that. And with realizing that, you know, I cannot be everything for my child. Yes, maybe I want them to be polite or do whatever it is or play a sport, but I'm not able to do that for them. And maybe I'd rather sit with them at home and just look at the ceiling or something, and or maybe have a relaxed evening. But this should, that needs to happen, gets us, oh no, I need to go do this with them, that with them. And, you know, and prioritizing what is important for me as a parent is, and what I am able to do. Well, I could sit and read books, but I'm no fun parent. Fun and playfulness and rough tumbling, I have boys, was never my category. It was never my thing, you know? And so being authentic with what we can give our kids and what we want our kids to, how our kids want to be, because really they learn from what we are, how we are, not totally. What we're doing.
Totally.
And that's the piece of social change, because if we are in touch with ourselves and we understand that, yes, this is important to me, this is not important at this moment, my gut feeling tells me to do this, I'm in touch with my whole self, we will model that for our kids. And for at least, I'll speak of myself, I didn't have that model growing up. So just by modeling that for them, they grew up with this notion of like, there's being as much as doing. There is this gut feeling that is body intelligence that is just as important as thinking intelligence. And, you know, with that, you know, awareness and choice comes, they would be able to make decisions early on for themselves.
Yeah.
Than we were able to growing up. And simply, they will take no bullshit from others because they're connected with who they are. And that's, you know, that's how it changes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's another big piece in that which stems off it, and it talks about what Natasha and Manel, you said about the village in terms of, you know, when we're living our authentic selves and we're in our passion and, you know, really, really shining our own light unapologetically and all of the things that we weren't able to do when we were kids, so many of us. And when we can bring other people into our children's lives as well on a daily basis, yeah, we can offer them these different versions of man and different versions of woman and different versions of mother and father. And it's the fastest way into change, into social change. Because then we, you know, our kids are only not just exposed to one version of man and one version of woman, one version of mother and father on a daily basis. You know, it's all of these other different versions who are all doing things different ways, all shining their lights and different, you know, and owning their passions in totally different ways that our kids are exposed to. And that's what I see moving forward as the fastest way into social change, because, you know, so many of us only saw one version, you know, and if we were lucky, we saw a version of dad, you know, of man, of father, but so many of us didn't. So that, you know, it's such a gift, and it's such another reason to be able to put yourself first, because you get all of these people involved in your kids' lives, and then you get to do less, and then you have more fun because you're doing less, and you know, you it's it's when you start to really flip these things on its head, all of those things that, and Malala, you touched on it so beautifully around that belief or belief that it has to be us, you know, it has to be me doing the bedtimes. And I mean, even Miles, when you said, you know, even the first year or the first 2 years has to be mum, you know, even that's kind of a belief around that, you know, when there's other people that we can bring in, we can have more time to fill our tanks and be better parents, and knowing that every single other person that's involved in our kids' lives is starting to break those old cycles from the past. Mm-hmm. Yeah, huge stuff.
Thanks. Thank you very much for such an inspiration you're doing right now. And I see people in the chat also writing about how lively and exciting all of this is. Maybe the last question for today, but very important also, that, you know, right now parenting is challenged all over the world. There's this new era of online, and it's really more difficult to stay embodied in front of a screen all the day. And now children are also going to school in online version. What do you have any tips, ideas for people how to stay embodied and yourself while doing all this online work, and help your children with that?
My view on this is to realize that digital world is quite dangerous thing. Like, it's like, I don't know, wine. So we have to create a culture around digital consumption. And we as parents are responsible for helping children to be reasonable with games and all these other digital interventions that they have, and try to have this in kind of reasonable amounts. So like, we have this role and responsibility. So not just kind of say, oh, somehow it will, you know, they will sort it out. They won't. If you haven't seen social change, they want what? And to be a role model in this, basically, because they learn from us. My answer is connection with nature. It's like, make sure that we do go for a walk, we do spend time outside. And so this is my answer. Nature and awareness of how dangerous it can be.
Yeah, I'll just say it shortly, that I completely agree with Natasha, and especially in these times, because we're all forced in a way, and the only way to connect with grandparents or whatever is often through media, not to mention friends. And media, online media, the sophistication of online media is accelerating at a pace that it never has before, and we can't keep up with it. So I think that question deserves its whole other panel discussion in a way, but I'll just kind of support what Natasha said about getting out and finding a healthy culture around it, because online learning it's here to stay. It's not over when COVID's over. It is here to stay. It's a lot cheaper. It's going to be happening a lot more. And it is effective. Like this panel, I think that we're just delivering goodness. I don't think that anybody's brain is getting rotten from watching this type of interaction, the culture that we're meeting under. So I think that that's, we need to, I'll just support what Natasha said. Yes, let's create a culture around it.
Yeah, it is. And it's also acknowledging, you know, that is stressful times. And sometimes our ideal or what we want or what we aim to do, it would not be just possible because we just don't have the capacity. And like Miles, you said, it is there. And my experience with having, you know, now two teenage boys is that having conversations and keeping, you know, the relationship open, because, you know, it's funny because whenever we try to put, you know, enforce restrictions of somehow, there was a way of, you know, finding loopholes, and they are great with finding loopholes. And so I started to acknowledge that, okay, you want to play for 6 hours, let's find a medium. You want to play for 6 hours, I'd like you to play for 1 hour. Let's find a somewhere in the middle to negotiate and talk about it, because at the end of it, they're gonna do it if we just completely just say no. And I've done that tonight. So it's acknowledging also that they are stressed as kids, with all the whole changes, they can't see friends. So finding the balance and making room for conversations of why me as a parent, it's my own responsibility to not let you play 12 hours a day a video game. It's my responsibility that you do your schoolwork and all these things, and keeping the conversation open, I think now more than ever is really important. And I'm, you know, of course, talking with the about older kids, probably negotiating with a 2-year-old is not going to be as sophisticated as or intellectual.
Mm. Yeah, I've got a couple of points to add, and I think I love the what you said, Natasha, about checking in with your own relationship with the internet, you know, because that is what we model to our kids. And one of the things that I definitely talk about is losing the charge around it, because I used to get so triggered around screens and, you know, too much screen time, and it was bad and it was wrong, and blah, blah, blah. And all of that charged energy came out in all of the interactions to do with my kids around screens. And it wasn't helpful. So I had to lose the charge around it and stop making it wrong so that I could actually support them in their choice to want to play, you know, some games and want to look at things online. And then with what Manal, you were saying, then I could set the conditions around it, you know, without making it wrong. And I got to experience some amazing things with my kids when they were, you know, playing a video game where they both got into a car and he was playing with his friend who lived half an hour's drive away. And they both got into this car and drove off in this video game. I was like, man, that's so cool. You know, we never had the opportunity to do that when we were kids. So I think balance is the key. And I must talk a lot about balance because my boys have started going, oh, it's all about balance. You know, and you know, making funny voices and saying that I say it a lot. So, and how to actually bring these conversations out without the charge, without the making it wrong, without the making it bad. Internet is amazing. I mean, as you said, Miles, the fact that we can sit here talking about parenting and talking about change and, you know, giving people wisdom and tools and guidance that our parents never had access to. Right. You know, so we are in the most incredible moment where we have so much more available to us, where it's all coming through the internet. So, you know, there's the balance, right? It's the gifts along with, you know, the potential, you know, impacts.
Dangers, yeah.
Yeah, the impacts and the benefits. That's the way that I like to talk about balance. And I think it's really, really important stuff to keep those conversations open and to really share our fears around it, you know, that. And I think that one of the best ways that I've been speaking about lately in terms of the Social Dilemma documentary that's just come out actually, you know, bringing it out and saying, look, this technology is new. We didn't have this when we were kids. So we're all kind of figuring out together. You know,
and
so
every parent should watch that documentary.
Absolutely. And talk to their kids about it. You know, the big themes about what's in it and really share from that place of, you know, we don't actually know what the impacts are. So when I see the impacts in your behavior, we're going to start to back the track up, you know, and I think that there's such beauty in that and in finding that balance. So yeah, it's good stuff.
Oh, well, this is fantastic. I really don't want to say that we are almost out of time, but we still have a little bit time. Well, I'll just steal it from the final advertising. So the question is, what if pausing our children's excitable chatter is overwhelming for them? Remember when we were talking about like pausing, slowing down, and they feel threatened if they can't keep their emotions at a distance.
Who was speaking about it? Because we don't have time for all of us, but somebody was speaking about
that. I think it was Jacqueline's take on.
So what was the, say that again, what was the question?
Yeah. If you ask your child to pause, you know, remember you were giving this, but it's overwhelming for them. They really want to spit it out. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, what just came to me then as you were talking was that sometimes I would actually go and touch them. You know, I'd actually go and put my hand on their chest or put my hand on their back or their chest, or even just, you know, take their hand, just bring some sort of physical connection into the moment. And what I find is that actually helps to ground them. That actually helps to bring them back into their body, you know, if they can't actually take that moment to pause, even if I've asked for it. So that's one way that I would start to navigate that one. Mm.
Thank you. And actually, now this is almost the end. We will post some links in the chat right now about your next steps. You can go to coffee break rooms and all the panelists are also invited there. You can reach this session for 48 hours and share and you know, enjoy it. And then you'll be able to upgrade and have it forever. And what else? There are some links for our presenters will be posted very soon. And I am going to give our presenters one last chance to actually give your top tip. We talked about how we should think, how we should change our mindset on parenting. And what is your top tip, how to make it embodied, how to actually become an embodied parent? In a few words,
I can go first.
Okay.
Childhood is the most dynamic developmental period of our lives, and it's not about what kind of development is happening. It's about how we manage. Development is an emergent principle. And the only way for us to be there to support our children is to be present in the present moment as development is emerging. And so my basic tip is to, very much like Jacqueline was saying, but very first be and be with, and then manage the development.
I love manage the development.
I'll take that because it's very much, you know, what, you know, parenting is much more about ourselves, our connection with ourselves, than what we are doing to and for our children. It begins with us.
Mm.
And this is why I'd like to say, breathe.
Mm.
It's powerful. And be kind to yourself.
Yeah, the piece that I would love to bring in is I know that a lot of the parents that I work with and myself as well, my practice tends to fall off if I'm feeling good. You know, if I'm feeling a bit rubbish and a bit, you know, then I would just think that I needed to do it then. But what I love to invite parents to do, anybody out there to do, is to make sure that you're doing your practices even when you're feeling good. Because it fills up your tank, which carries you through the times when your energy is lower, and it also becomes your default. Yeah, so that when you are in those lower times, those more challenged times, it's much more likely that you're going to reach for those embodiment practices because they've become your default. So keep going, even when you're feeling good. Because I remember I had a belief that was like, oh, I don't really need to do it. I did some last week. And it's like, nah, you've just got to keep filling up that tank.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. And the conference is going on. We will see more of very interesting and exciting topics to come. And actually, some of our presenters already had their presentation, so you can find it on portal. Some will be having, and we'll see you around. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Have a good day or evening or whatever. Bye-bye.